Proceed with the presentation.
Thank you very much, Chair. As I was indicating, Chair and honourable members, our presentation seeks not just to present on the bill which is in front of the committee, but also seeks to present the full background of where this comes from, the context in which we are working, the institutional model in collaboration with universities, and it also traces the key departments we have consulted and the progress to date on the side of making the model work. It then goes into detail about the specific provisions in the bill themselves. So that is the outline of the presentation there on the screen. So, Chair, I will move straight then towards the background. The concept of the Digital Skills Institute comes way, way back. It was introduced in the 2014-15 financial year, right up to the 2017 financial year. By then, we updated the portfolio committee, especially in the later time, in early 2017, on the concept of the institute, which is what we are going to take this committee through as well. As required by regulations around establishing new public entities, we had to develop a business case which needed to be approved by the Minister of Finance as well as the Minister of Public Service and Administration. So that was drafted between 2015 and 2016. And we then consulted with those departments and accordingly received the necessary approvals. Also, in 2016, the department published the National ICT Integrated Policy, which was released, I think, in September 2016. Amongst other policy provisions, there is a very clear call for the establishment again of this same institute. So if we were to trace again the background, the NDP itself, it provides for improving equitable access to enhance ICT services which require actions to stimulate demand by one, improving illiteracy through basic and secondary schooling, tertiary adult education and supplier training in order to support the production of multilingual, relevant and local content for public programming and information services, whether education or entertainment, and develop online and mobile service and application. The NDP states that this development of ICT services and skills will then increase the demand for ICT services as content and applications become increasingly relevant to the needs and interests of the wider community. It also says for the sector to grow, it will require a significant number of different skilled people to fill the range of specialized job opportunities that will be created, and therefore the education system will need to prepare for this. So as we developed the ICT white paper in 2016, we then made sure that we recognized the need for new skills dispensation to drive the heightened innovation in the sector. We then move on to present the digital skills delivery framework, which truly shows that the digital skills revolution is not a program for the select few or beyond metric kind of people, but it expands the entirety of the spectrum of our society. At number one, there at the bottom of the screen, we talk of illiteracy. This is really digital skills that enable people who are not familiar with the applications and the gadgets that we use today to access information, communicate, and so on. So at that very basic level, the model recognizes that that's where we actually need to start. But we are certainly also aware that we should not end there, although the bulk of the need is there, but we need to make provision across the entire spectrum. Therefore, we also provide for what we call sector user digital skills. These are essentially people who use the digital skills in other sectors other than the ICT, IT sector, because we recognize that ICTs are indeed not only an enabler now in businesses across various sectors, but also an essential disruptor or a new model of doing a business across sectors. We also recognize that we need to avail skills to what we call ICT practitioners. These are the people who are basically in the IT or ICT industry and practice using these skills that we develop. And at the highest level, we then talk of e-leadership skills. Here we're talking of programs that could even include masters, PhDs, and even postdoctoral and executive and entrepreneurs to also fully equip them to and ensure that their institutions are fully positioned to grow those institutions and remain competitive in the digital age. We are also emphasizing that this program or revolution is not necessarily limited to individuals, but it is also targeted to SMMEs, where necessary competencies for SMMEs, both in the ICT sector as well as the other sectors which use these skills, is needed to grow and develop those small enterprises through technology enablement for enhanced sustainability and potential job creation through localizing the production of some of these equipment, and also in developing the local content in what we call an innovation-based economy. So what is actually the Igamba Digital Skills Institute then? Through this bill, we are seeking to integrate three components which are related to skills development in the department. The first one is the National Electronic Media Institute of South Africa, which is NEMESA. This is a public entity in our fold, which traditionally used to specialize in broadcasting skills training. It has, over the years, developed so many skilled people for the broadcasting industry. So we mentioned that institute, NEMESA, with the program of the department, which we used to call eSkills Institute. It is also the program in the department responsible for the development of policy as well as eSkills or digital skills program, as well as another unit in the department which we call the Institute for Space and Software Applications, or in short, ESA. So these three components are being meshed through this bill to create now what we call the Igamba Digital Skills Institute. I think I need to perhaps take a pause here and inform the members that over the process of developing this bill, it started off being called ICAMVA National E-Skills Institute, but as discussions took place and ultimately at the portfolio committee, a decision was made that rather than using e-skills and digital skills interchangeably, we focus on one terminology, which is essentially encompassing all that we are seeking to do. So we settled on the term digital skills rather than e-skills, which we had originally been using interchangeably with digital skills. So we are saying the new institute will act as a catalyst for new digital skills in South Africa, partnering with other role players within and outside government to drive the aspirations captured in the NDP, our broadband policy, which we call SA Connect, and of course the ICT white paper. Essentially for social appropriation of ICT for local benefits and the meaningful use and operational capability at the consumer level. The next slide is what looks like a very busy slide, but I'm going to try and summarize it quickly. Chairperson, the part on the extreme left is yellow, titled Institute there in the slide. That essentially seeks to cover the key functions of or the key objectives of this institute. At the extreme left, which we have already said, this institute will be a catalyst. It therefore develops the strategic direction and guidance for the movement to develop a digital skills. It will also be responsible to coordinate source funding for digital skills and will also do the monitoring and evaluation. Then the last two arrows, which are pointing up, reflect what will come as an input into the institute by other role players and stakeholders with which this institute will partner. And these are education and training institutions, these are your universities, these are your TVET colleges, and to some degree even schools. And we are also saying those institutions, particularly TVET colleges and universities, will also assist in performing research work that will feed into the institute. Then in green in the middle, we are sort of capturing then the key activities of the model, whether it's from the institute itself or its stakeholders, but those activities include the promotion, guiding the development, training, learning, research of digital skills. It also will identify the supply and demand needs of digital skills and therefore encourage development of digital skills in response to identified needs. It will do awareness and promotion work for meaningful end use of ICTs. Will do M&E on the development and levels of digital skills. Will also develop and promote digital skills framework and also hopefully enhance employment and enterprise development opportunities for digital training. On the extreme right, then, we are sort of indicating the kinds of partnerships this institute will have to develop, both or amongst others, government, business and industry, civil society, up to international and national digital skills organization. At the bottom there, we are reflecting that this institute will not be working by itself, but will be heavily supported through the network of universities, TVET colleges, non-profit organizations, business, and the adult education system. Through this framework, we envisage that a network of what we call collabs, these are collaboration laboratories or centers for digital skills, which will be created as a result of partnerships between the Institute and the participating universities and TVET colleges across the country, which will then partner to deliver the digital skills. This network of colleagues already exists. I think I need to mention here that in as much as the bill is still under production through the parliamentary system, we have already started with NEMISA to start to position them to deliver on this bigger mandate, in order that by the time the legislation is promulgated, they are able to almost hit the ground running. We have also been able to secure some funding already from the fiscus to support the broadened mandate of the institute. So these are the collabs that have already been established across the 7 provinces, and with the 2 other provinces, they've already signed a memoranda of understanding with the view that they will also become those collaboration laboratories. So if I were to quickly take the members through what each collab in each province is specializing on, I will start in Northern Cape. We say this is a collab that deals with what we call knowledge-based economy and e-social astuteness, essentially illiteracy. And in the Eastern Cape, we have a collab that specializes on ICT for rural development. In the Western Cape is a collab specializing in e-inclusion and social innovation. In KwaZulu-Natal, a collab dealing with enablement of effective service delivery. In Mpumalanga and Free State, that is where the memorandums of understanding have been signed, but the discussions are still underway to then concretize those into a formal collab. In the Northwest, the collab specializes on agro-tourism. In Limpopo, it's mostly issues of e-health through connected health. And in Gauteng, the collab deals with creative new media industries. Essentially, this, amongst other things, still preserves the original mandate of NEMISA, which has to do with broadcasting, but then extends to deal with other creative and content media industries. If I were to move on, Chair, so as part of the process of developing both the business case, which I mentioned, as well as the bill, we have had to consult with the National Treasury. The issues we were discussing there in the main had to do with the funding for the Institute or for the Digital Skilling Program, as well as the consolidation of e-skills components of the department. As I have already indicated, our business case was approved or we received concurrence from the Minister of Finance to that effect. We have also been consulted the Department of Public Service and Administration, because particularly some of the functions that we are consolidating into the Institute are functions that used to reside inside the department. So we needed to have an understanding and agreement on the transfer of such functions and committed resources to the Institute. Again, we received the concurrence of the Minister of Public Service and Administration for the business case. We have also consulted the Department of Higher Education and Training. The members will know this is the department responsible for higher education, of course, but particularly therefore the universities and TVET colleges. So it was important that we then seek to align the legislation relating to teaching and training We were also exploring possibilities of co-funding for digital skills, particularly looking into their skills development and funding. And of course, we were looking at separating nicely the respective roles and responsibilities with respect to teaching and training. We received there, which is not required by law or regulation, but still concurrence between our respective DGs, wherein they signed a memorandum of understanding with respect to digital skills. This slide really just shows the key drivers which give impetus to digital skilling. These are issues relating to digital citizenry. The Deputy Minister has already mentioned 4IR. We are observing that 41% of all activities in South Africa are susceptible to automation. There are issues regarding the World Economic Forum SA Internet for All program, which recognizes digital skilling and awareness as one of the key pillars. We are also seeing high unemployment in South Africa also provides fertile ground for disseminating these skills and hopefully improving employability or at least business startup opportunities. There we are linking that with innovation-based entrepreneurship, and there is certainly a lot of platforms for collaboration. We use another terminology which we call digital emancipation, which truly reflects the ability to immerse oneself into the digital economy. And of course, there is also an equally important area of cybersecurity and awareness. As people take up the use of the ICTs, then they become vulnerable unless there is a sound environment which ensures a security online. I will go quickly through this slide, Chairperson, which just captures the progress to date. The bill and the preliminary legal opinion was received from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor in May 2017. In July, it was presented to the Cabinet Committee. In November, then Cabinet granted approval for the bill to be gazetted for public comment. And in December, again, the bill and the revised opinion from the Chief State Law Advisor were received. We also received comments, analyzed them, and duly incorporated those which we could into the bill. In January 2018, then the bill was presented to the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation, or Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, who signed off the CEAS report. And then the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor assisted in finalizing the bill. And as they made the opinion, the bill met the requirements of the Constitution. And then in February 2018, the bill was presented again to the Cabinet after until it was approved by Cabinet and then ultimately submitted into the parliamentary process. In November last year, then the Portfolio Committee approved the amended bill for submission to the National Assembly, and I guess that is why we are here today, because the bill has been referred to the NCOP. I now, Chair, am going to move straight on to the key provisions of the bill, going almost section by section, but not again touching each provision in that section. So the first main section really deals with the actual establishment of the institute. We are saying the institute is established as a juristic person. It integrates the three components which I have mentioned, NEMISA, A Skills Institute, and ESA, and that it is governed by the PFMA and is to be listed as a public entity. The following section deals with the objects of the institute. I have already touched on this. It will serve as a national catalytic collaborator for digital skills development. It will collaborate with all the institutions I have indicated, but particularly those dealing with post-school education and training, to maximize the use of existing infrastructure and resources and to respond to the demand for digital skills. It will also encourage, facilitate, and promote innovative research networks aimed at promoting and developing digital skills. The functions of the institute, as captured in section 4, we are saying the institute must promote and guide the development, training, learning, research, and innovation of digital skills, identify the demand and supply of digital skills in the entire republic, encourage the development of digital skills in response to the identified needs, raise awareness and promotion for the meaningful and responsible use of ICTs, monitor and evaluate development and the level of digital skills capabilities in the country, and advise government, business, civil society, and education and training institutions accordingly. It will develop and promote digital skills framework, which includes a model for training and development. And finally, it will also enhance employment and enterprise development opportunities for digital skills training. Oh, again, the functions continued, sorry, Chair. It will comply with the NQF legislation, the Higher Education Act, and the Continued Education and Training Act, and the Skills Development Act. These are all the pieces of legislation dealing with education and training. It will interact and foster collaboration with the ministers responsible for higher education and training, as well as the Minister for Basic Education. It will collaborate with government, business, civil society, and education and training institutions, maximize the use of public resources. And we are saying the minister may, after consulting the board, direct in writing some additional functions which are not inconsistent with this act, and that the institute must duly consider such a policy and policy directions from the minister. Now, let me talk about the collapse as provided for in section 5 of the bill. It says that the institute may establish a collapse, like I said, COLLAB stands for Collaboration Laboratories, and as a result, the institute must enter into written agreements with post-school education and training institutions, setting out the terms and conditions for the establishment and functions of the COLLABs within the post-school and education and training institution. The then established COLLABs will be, or we are saying they must be accessible to all stakeholders, provide feedback to the institute to enable the institute to develop and promote digital skills, to promote and undertake research, provide research support to students, initiate and implement projects aimed at promotion of digital skills, and establish the digital skills networks across all key stakeholders. And of course, the COLLABs will be subject, as is the institute, to the NQF Act. And therefore, COLLABs will develop accredited courses to facilitate digital skills training. Then the bill moves on to dealing with the corporate governance issues pertaining to the institute. Particularly, again, Section 5 deals with the establishment, composition, and functions of the board. I will just quickly run through some of these responsibilities of the board. One is to govern and provide strategic direction to the institute. serves as the accounting authority of the institute as provided for in the PFMA. It also has the authority to exercise all the powers and functions of the institute, except to the extent this act provides otherwise. It is subject to the PFMA, and as a result, the board may in writing delegate any power entrusted upon it or function in terms of this act to any committee of the board and the chief executive officer. And we are saying the board should consist of no less than 5 and no more than 8 non-executive members. It should also include the CEO and CFO as executive members of the board. The chairperson and deputy chairperson of the board will be appointed by the minister from the team of non-executive members. And we're saying the board may designate any other non-executive member to act as a chairperson in the absence of the chairperson. And we're saying the minister must establish a performance management system which provides for the conclusion of an annual performance agreement with the board, setting out key responsibilities and key performance indicators. Again, on corporate governance, we're detailing the process of appointing the board. In Section 7, we say the minister must appoint non-executive members of the board, and such board must be broadly representative of the demographics of the Republic. And we will issue a notice for the appointment of the board in the Gazette and 2 national newspapers calling for nominations. And the minister will set up an independent nomination committee which must compile a short list of no more than 20 names. The nomination committee will consider province skills, knowledge and experience in the following areas: ICT, academia, ICT research, innovation and practice, ICT management, digital skills, law, intellectual property and business skills. We should enable the board to achieve its objectives. We're saying if the minister receives no nominations or receives an insufficient number of nominations within the period in the notice, then the minister may, after consultation with the panel, appoint the required number of qualified persons, in a transparent manner. The next section deals with the term of office and conditions of service of non-executive members of the board. We're saying board members hold office for a period not exceeding 3 years, which they may be reappointed into, but may not serve for more than 2 terms. They are appointed as part-time members according to the conditions of service as determined by the minister in terms of this act. They will be paid from the monies appropriated to the institute, such remuneration and allowances as determined by the minister in consultation with the minister responsible for finances. And again, the minister will have to consult the board in order to extend the period of office of any member of the board for a period of no more than 6 months after the expiry of that member's term of office or until a new member has been appointed, whichever comes first. The next section deals with the disqualifiers for members of the board and removal from office. We are saying a person may not be appointed or continue as a member of the board if such a person, one, is declared mentally ill in terms of the Mental Health Care Act, has been convicted of any offense and sentenced to imprisonment without the option of a fine, has been convicted of any offense involving dishonesty with or without the option of a fine. If, again, that member becomes or is a member of the National Assembly, a provincial legislature, or the council of a municipality, or is appointed as a delegate to the National Council of Provinces by a provincial legislature. the disqualifications are continued, the person may not serve on the board if that person is not a South African citizen. If that person has been or is removed from office of trust on account of misconduct or the misappropriation of money, if that person is an unrehabilitated insolvent, if that person has or acquires an interest in a business or enterprise which may conflict or interfere with the proper performance of the duties of the member of the board, and if that person is an office bearer of any registered political party. This section still deals with governance issues, but now talks about the vacancies, and we're saying there shall be a vacancy if a non-executive member is removed by the minister in terms of the relevant section, or if that member tenders his or her resignation and the resignation takes effect, if that person dies, or if the term of office of that non-executive member expires. We also provide that where a vacancy has arisen, then that the minister must, within 6 months of such vacancy arising, appoint a suitable person as a board member. The minister may, until the vacancy has been filled, appoint a suitable person as a member of the board from the nominees previously shortlisted by the nomination committee or in any other transparent manner or on a temporary basis. Any member of the board appointed to fill a vacancy will hold office for the remainder of the period of the predecessor's term of office, unless the minister determines that the member of the board holds office for a longer period, which may not exceed 3 years. There is also a section 11, which deals with conflict of interest. We are saying a member of the board must, upon appointment and annually thereafter, disclose in writing to the minister and the board if he or she, his or her spouse, family member, business partner or associate has an interest in any matter which may preclude him or her from performing his or her functions as a member of the board in a fair, unbiased and proper manner. We're also saying the board member must disclose to the board at every meeting of the board if he or she, his or her spouse, again, family member, business partner or associate has an interest in any matter before the board which may preclude him or her again from performing his or her functions as a member of the board in a fair, unbiased and proper manner. A member of the board may not vote at or attend or in any manner participate in any meeting of the board if the member has an interest or is prohibited from participating in such a meeting. And we're saying the board may prohibit a member of the board from participating in the meeting of the board if during the course of the meeting the board has reason to believe that such a member has a conflict of interest. The bill further provides that prior to making a decision to prohibit a member of the board from participating in a meeting, the board must give the affected member an opportunity to provide oral reasons as to why he or she should not be prohibited from participating in the meeting. Then we provide that the decisions taken by the board and the reasons for such decisions must be recorded in the minutes of the meeting in question. We also provide that if any member of the board had a conflict of interest, any decision of the board to which that conflict of interest relates shall be null and void. And a member of the board is guilty of an offense and liable on conviction to a fine not exceeding $500,000 or to imprisonment for a period not exceeding 5 years or to both such fine and imprisonment if he or she has been found to have violated the provisions of this Act relating to conflict of interest. Then in Section 12, the bill provides for the Code of Ethics and Governance Principles. It provides that the board must, in consultation with the minister, develop and make publicly available on its website a code of ethics and governance principles for members of the board, which must be reviewed at least every 5 years. The code of ethics and governance principles must be developed by the board within 120 days from the appointment of the first board in terms of this act, and must at least provide for these following. 1. Fiduciary duties of members of the board, which must include the duty of a member to diligently perform his or her functions of office and exercise the utmost good faith, honesty, integrity, and care in the performance of his or her functions. The procedure for annual and ad hoc declarations of interest to the minister. Governance principles in terms of which the board will carry out its powers and functions, and that a member of the board who contravenes or fails to comply with the code of ethics and governance principles is guilty of misconduct. Section 13 then of the bill provides for the board committees. It provides that the board may from time to time appoint one or more committees as may be required for the board to fulfill its functions and meet its objectives in terms of this act. It also provides that the board must assign members of the board to serve on committees based on their knowledge, skills, and experience, and determine, amongst others, the terms of reference of a committee, composition, tenure, reporting mechanisms, process for dissolution, and method and reasons for removal of a member from a committee. It also provides that non-executive members of the board must make up the majority of the members of the committee. The board, the bill provides, may appoint any external person with the necessary knowledge, expertise, and experience to assist a committee in the performance of its function. Unless delegated by the board, a committee has no decision-making powers and can only make recommendations to the board. A committee with due regard for financial prudence may meet as often as is necessary in order to carry out its function and may determine its own procedures. Each committee must be chaired by a non-executive member of the board. Section 15 of the bill deals with the meetings of the board. It provides that the chairperson, or if absent, the deputy chairperson, must preside at the meeting. If the chair and deputy chair are not present at the meeting, the members present must elect a non-executive member from amongst themselves to preside at such a meeting. The board must meet at least 4 times a year. A meeting of the board may be conducted by electronic communication, or one or more members of the board may participate in a meeting via electronic communication, provided that all persons participating are able to communicate concurrently with each other without an intermediary and are able to participate effectively. The board may determine the procedure for its meeting. The bill also provides that the chairperson may convene a special meeting of the board and must convene a special meeting within 14 days of receipt of a written request signed by at least the majority of the members of the board. It provides that the quorum for a meeting of the board is 2/3 of its members, and that a decision of the board must be taken by resolution of the majority of the members. And in the event of an equality of votes, the person presiding at the meeting has a casting vote in addition to his or her deliberative vote. Section 15 deals with the dissolution of the board. It empowers the minister to dissolve the board if, 1, the board is unable to perform its duties in terms of this act, 2, if there is a breakdown in the relationship amongst the members of the board which renders the continued effective functioning of the board impossible. 3, on any other reasonable grounds which renders the continued effective functioning of the board impossible. And it further provides that in exercising these powers in terms of this section, the minister must comply with the promotion of the Administrative Justice Act. And it says within 21 days of the dissolution of the board, the minister must appoint an interim board consisting of a minimum of 3 persons to assume the responsibilities of the board until a new board is constituted in accordance with the procedures mentioned above. A new board must be constituted within 180 days. And any person who was a member of the board that was dissolved in terms of this section may be reappointed to a new board if the person did not contribute to its dysfunction. The minister must, within 60 days of the dissolution of the board, submit a report to...
Chair, with greater respect, my intervention is just to ask you to intervene that the presenter must summarize. For instance, this presentation, I've just read it, I'm done with it, please, so that we give space and time for engagement and asking questions, you know, please.
Thank you. Can you go past the state of
I had indicated I would be guided by the chair, the presentation.
Yeah,
no,
I was waiting for someone to raise. Because I was looking at them and I saw that, yeah. Thank you. You can proceed. Thank you very much for expecting someone from us to co-chair with you.
Uh-huh.
We'll do that.
Thank you, but he was... When he began, he was saying, begin to present, he was saying... I don't want to say what I want to say. I told you know what I wanted to say. But in any case, you are saying he's going to through this thing face by face, to explore by clause, to explain to us, and that's what he was doing, clause by clause. So in the beginning, we could put object and say not clause by clause, summarize. Thank you to central casting.
Thank you very much, Chair and Honourable Members. I'm going to go a little bit quicker then. Then Section 16 deals with the process for the appointment of the Chief Executive Officer and the Chief Financial Officer. These are the executive members of the board, and I will quickly move on to the next slide. Section 17 then spells out the functions of the Chief Executive Officer, essentially to deal with administrative issues. We provide for the acting Chief Executive Officer and Chief Financial Officer in the event that there is no person occupying those posts. Then Section 19 deals with the termination of employment of the CEO and CFO. Again, it provides for the process to be followed in doing such. Then Section 20 deals with the staff of the institute. Again, the process of how the employees of the institute will be brought on board, their remuneration, and of course issues relating to code of conduct. Section 21 deals with the funds of the institute, which are monies essentially appropriated by Parliament and any other legal sources of income, including interest and other investment. This Section 22 provides for the minister to make a regulation on any matter relating to the proper implementation and administration of the Act, and also provide for policy and policy directions to the board. The Section 23 then deals with the transitional arrangements which provide for the dissolution of the current NMISA and deregistration in terms of the Companies Act, and then the transitional arrangements with respect to boards as well as the function personnel of NMISA, ESI and ESA being transferred to the Institute and so on. The last section, section 23, which also deals with transitional matters, provide for cases where there are legal proceedings against any person transferred, those will still be disposed of as if there had been no transfer, deals with the income tax issues, and deals with the transitional matters relating to the CEO and CFO of NMISA becoming at least interim CEO and CFO of the Institute for the remainder of their term, and also provides for the members of the board of NMISA to be members of the Institute, and the transference of policies, procedures, and processes of NMISA to the Institute. Chair, that was the last slide. Thank you very much.
And I thank you for the presentation, very detailed.
Presentation for us that don't understand and want to understand. Moving forward to do our work. Thank you very much. I'm going to allow people to ask questions because I don't want to assume that I'm clever, then at the end of the day I don't understand. Thank you very much. Honorable Pakis.
Chair, let's appreciate and welcome the presentation. My question is very simple. One, the content and the substance of this connect to the ICP policy that you have adopted. That's point number one. Point number two, can you please unpack your first bullet, page 7, and your third bullet, same page, page 7. Your potential on job creation using localization and local content. You know, I'm asking this chairperson because we are used to grandiose presentations with members of this parliament, but practically on the ground, you can't measure the impact and the significance effect on the lives of people. I'm raising that point if you go to page 9. That slide on page 9, this slide has been like this for few months, if my memory serves me well, where you have these different provinces and you have Free State and Mpumalanga vacant. Nothing is happening. It's because there are no people or there's no intelligence that can deal with a project that must take place in Mpumalanga and Free State. And since you will be disestablishing these two entities to collapse them to form one entity, since the existence of this, I understand we are dealing with a piece of legislation. Yeah, we are not dealing with the annual report. But you will not escape such questions that since the existence of these particular entities that are going to collapse, what is the impact in terms of job creation, changing the lives of our people in the Eastern Cape, in the deep rural areas? Because you are talking about enterprises. You have been talking about these enterprises. I want you to assist us as members of the committee and the representatives of the aspirations of our people and their social needs to better understand the impact. Yes, Chair, those are the questions that I want members here from the department, led by the deputy minister, mm-hmm. to assist us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Julius.
Thank you, Chairperson, Deputy Minister, and DDG. I think I'll start by saying this is a very, very good initiative. This is precisely what we need in South Africa right now, to develop our people but also simultaneously grow our economy. However, I have a few concerns with this. I noticed that you, in the bill, you elaborated a lot. I think over 60% was on the board, the functions of the board, and more on what you will do was, you know, I expected more on what you will do, what your aim is with this bill. So I get the indication that it's another board for job creation. And let me try to get into the challenge you to respond in a way to try and convince me that this is not so. Because remember, if I go to the presentation first of that you, page 36 and 37, I just want to ask questions first on the board. On page 36, you say that the board of NEMISA will be dissolved upon the commencement of this act, ne? And then you say the functions, personnel, resources of all three will be transferred to the institute immediately upon commencement of this act. Now, that's according to Labour Relations Act. Did you do the financial impact study there? What will this cost this new company if you take over? But if you look on page 37, but also read with the first bullet on 36, upon commencement of this act, NEMISA will be dissolved and deregistered in accordance with the Companies Act, and so forth and so forth. Then you go further on page 37, any member of the NEMISA board who immediately prior to the commencement of this act were members of that board must be deemed to have been appointed as members of the board of the institute for the remainder of the period. I put it to you that this is a job creation for the existing board, just to continue. And I'm not satisfied with the work that NEMISA has done. It's a new mandate with the very same people who wants to the same mandate in a slightly different fashion. Chairperson, like I say, it's a good initiative. We need it. But we need to do it right. Let's look at your mandate, what you seek to do now. Now, when I look at this, why can education not do it? We have basic education in this country. We have higher education in this country. Why is it necessary for this department? I know you're working with ICT. Yes, work with ICT. Your mandate is not to teach. Your mandate is not to collaborate. Your mandate is to inform education what we need in ICT, to develop the infrastructure for ICT to teach. For basic education, higher education, to teach. It's the same like the Department of Finance wants to go into schools and universities and teach accounting because it's part of their realm. Education is part of basic and higher education. It's not your mandate. You are seeking jobs for a board that doesn't have a mandate anymore in this country. This is good. Give this whole idea to education and say, go on with it. We'll save money for this country. Convince me why we need an institution and a board that will cost this country millions again. Please convince me. Chairperson, I want to know from this department, is this the best option to deliver this mandate? Is this the best option to go for an institution and a board? Chair, I want to go to my last one. I want to know, on page 613, you speak about your existing infrastructure and resources. What do you have to deliver this mandate? Will you rely on the resources of basic and higher education or other societal institutions in the private sector or so? What do you have to deliver this mandate at this stage? I also want to know, what are the opinions, because I thought it would be prudent of you to give us the opinions of the ministers of higher and basic education on this, because clearly you're stepping into their zone. I thought that you would at least give us that information to say they agree with it or they don't agree with it. Where will their power start and where end, and where will yours start and end? How will you, with the collabs, how will you work with them? For me, a collab is not necessary. Just give this document and all the plans to higher education, basic education. You can even go and be the board or the workers or employees that does, can be absorbed into higher education and deliver this mandate there. Why do you need a board and an institution? It's job creation for some. Chairperson, the white paper on ICT also says that we need to rationalize state-owned entities. Now, this is taking, I think, three into one. Unnecessarily one. It's obfuscating the facts that we're rationalizing. You're trying to do something, say you're rationalizing. There's no mandate for this. There's no mandate for this. It's higher education, basic education. According to me, I want you to please convince me. I want to feel better when I go out of here. The finances, you already explained that it will come from fiscus. You already secured funding from fiscus. Now, that's my worry now. That's my worry. Are we rubber stamping something in the NCOP? If you secure funding that we didn't approve as Parliament, can you please explain to me how does that work? Do you already have the money? Is it secure? How much is it? How do you know what you will need in terms of resources and all that? Because that is very unclear to me. Chairperson, the last point is public comment. Now, if you look at page 12, I just want to go there quickly. Public comment is very, very important, especially with us in the NCOP, Chairperson. If you come to a bill, we want to make sure that we comply with everything. Now, I know this, how the bill is tagged. I don't have issues with the tagging of the bill. But if you look at November 2017 on page 12, public comment was gazetted for public comment. And then the bill was revised again in December. How do we give something public comment in less than a month? We don't have the specific dates of the 7th of November. It can be the 1st of December. Is that opportune time for public comment? And then, Chairperson, I also want to hear from the NCOP side, the Select Committee. Are we going to allow for public comment since the bill is now with us? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think it's our responsibility. Honorable Nyambi.
Thanks, Chair. Let me join and welcome the overview from the DM and DDG. I thought probably it was a strategy when you were dealing with the presentation to take us till lunch so that we won't have enough time to engage. But I realized that probably we're not guided properly when it was clarified. I'll start from the last question by Honorable Julius. Well, personally, I agree with this spirit of the intention of this bill in front of us. But there are some issues that are more relevant for us to be able to find each other. The first one is in page 12. If you go to page, slide 12, or page 12, if you go to page 12, some constitutional implications and legal implications. In terms of the constitution of South Africa, drafters decided to make parliament to be the two houses, National Assembly and NCOP. And if you look at the last two columns, the portfolio committee started dealing with this one in March. It means they took the entire year until the end of the year. And it's now in the National Council of Provinces. It's a very important piece of legislation. But the implications, I can say it now, Chair. Today we happen to have the last programming as the NCOP that was chaired by the chairperson of the NCOP, looking at what will be done till the end of the year. Fortunately, this is part of what was considered. But the remarks by the chairperson was very clear that anything that will be a shortcut that will create problems is not something that we are going to do as National Council of Provinces, because if it's going to be challenged and be taken to court, the embarrassment is not about Parliament. The judgment will be about NCOP. And we have a very important legislation that is in line with our national development plan as a country being given to us while we're about to close the cajun. So I'm raising it, Chair, as a point that might create some problems. Should it happen that there are some issues that we might need more of engagement and clarification, time might be against us, because it's a fact, it's not a secret that in less than 2 weeks we'll be rising as NCOP on the 28th, going to be engaged in the process of preparing for the election that will be in May. So it's an issue that, Chair, I'm raising it, so that both DM and DDG, we are mindful that you are presenting something very important, but there are issues probably that are beyond your control. When something is in the National Assembly, it's the National Assembly that is dealing with it. But if the National Assembly decide that they are going to deprive us an opportunity to do it justice, then we're not going to get to a situation where we just do it for the sake of doing it. We'll try to play our part and where we can. And if it's going to be possible to be doable in the remaining weeks, we're going to do it. But if it's impossible, understand the situation that we are in. The second issue, Chair, from my part, is the one that has been raised by Honorable Pakis, the issue of Mpumalanga. You know, when you come to us, we are different to, is that slide? When you come to us, we are different to the Portfolio Committee. The Portfolio Committee, it's a national representatives. When you come to the Select Committee, we represent the interests of these provinces. And when I see that, when I introduce myself, I said I'm Chomo Nyambi, I'm from Mpumalanga. When I see that there's Mpumalanga there, and it's empty, and Free State is empty, DDG, you said something about the issue of the memorandum of understanding that has been signed with the two. Elaborate a bit so that you understand what I'm referring to, so that we are on the same page. Otherwise, we will have assumptions that might be wrong about the triangle that we're always fighting here, that when you look at the country, it must consider some of these provinces that are always being left out when dealing with serious issues. The second one, the third one, it's about the issue of just focusing on post education schooling. Why? Because the challenge is beyond the post-education school. It's an issue that I think maybe you can clarify us. The other one is about the part of the board. Well, my take out of what you are presenting, you said that there is going to be an independent nomination committee. I don't want to assume that I understand what I'm referring to. So clarify your understanding of an independent committee. The section 7.1, when dealing with corporate governance. Very same one when looking at corporate governance, section 8. The number of years for members of the board. Both DM and your delegation, do you think 3 years it's relatively fine for a board? You get to an office, you get workshopped, when you start to grasp and understand the issues, then your term of office it's over. Then you just will have people that won't be understanding what they are doing. I mean, I'm using ourselves as an example. I come in as a member. Before I can even understand the rules of parliament, they are telling us that there will be elections on the 8th. Then it's 5 years, but you are talking about 3 years. Then it means there's something maybe we are missing. The other one, it's about the issue of Section 9, corporate governance. The issue of saying if we are an office bearer of any registered political party. Clarify it to us. What is a proper understanding of this thing? I remember not so long ago there was a debate about the Judicial Service Commission when they were interviewing judges about the very same issue, and the legal fundis are defining this thing totally different to how we define it. And I want maybe to understand probably we are defining it according to them. But my last part is linked to the first one that I've raised, that if slide 12 gave the National Assembly Portfolio Committee from March till the end of the year, and then you expect ANCOP to do it in less than, not even a month, in just 2-3 weeks. It's an issue that Honorable Julius has raised it, but it's not a question for the delegation, for DM and the delegation, but it's an issue that we have to discuss as a select committee when looking at it so that we are doing justice, but we are not going to do any shortcut. But if it's doable, we're going to do it. If it's impossible, it will be impossible. Then it's for the sixth parliament to be doing the justice to this thing. With that, Chair, I would like to thank you for the opportunity and thank the presentation. Well, I agree, you know, with the spirit of it. I'm just worried about what the points that I've raised that might deprive us the opportunity to taking the country forward. About the very important legislation, but being presented at the wrong time.
Yeah, thank you, Honorable Koni.
I've just presented it.
We
leave it for the sixth parliament, you won't be
here. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Continue this side. Did you know that?
Thank you, the DDG, for a bit proper presentation, because partly it speaks to the EFF manifesto. mind you, DDG and the president, we'd never oppose to a bill that seeks to better the the lives of the poor, especially when it talks about investing in education. But I would agree with Honorable Julius that I think you should leave this or take it up to the level of Department of Education, Basic Education, and the Higher Education. My question would be on that slide of provinces. I don't know what Honorable Nyambi was talking about, because he would always say that Mpumalanga is one of the most progressive provinces. They don't need anything. They are sorted. There's no crisis there. So I don't understand why is he being a crybaby today. So I'm happy that you are initiating that in Northern Cape, because there is a high level of illiteracy in that province, and that makes job creations or unemployment very high. We in Northern Cape, the land thieves own about, if I'm not mistaken, 95% of the land in Northern Cape. But I stand to be corrected, but it's over 90%. And the workers in Northern Cape who works in the farms get paid by the wines. So I want to know your plan in activating this. How would you then start? What is your plan? How would you start? Is it, because you're saying it's from the basic level to higher level of education. Your plan in starting this, how are you going to make sure that you put this into place, the initiative? And the job creations that you're talking about, as Honorable Pakis has indicated, how are you then going to create those jobs? And my next question would be, others were dealt with by previous speakers. Well, the next question was answered as you continued with other slides. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Julius?
Chairperson, just for clarity's sake, our terminology and stuff, I just want clarity from the Honourable Member when she says land thieves. I want to follow her argument, but I don't know who she's referring to. Is it a certain race or what is it? I don't know. I don't recall us discussing land thieves here, because it's a bit out of order and in bad taste. We're dealing with legislation here that doesn't have anything to do with land. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't think you need to answer,
but I think you want. Yeah. I need to clarify him, because he said he wants to leave this meeting at last five. Yeah, feeling better. So I must make sure he leaves this meeting feeling great, not better.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think Julius is asking me an answer. He knows whom I'm referring to when I say the land thieves, number one. Number two, by talking or referring to the land thieves, I did not say I was quoting from the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Pastor, you want to have
a... No, thank you very much, Honourable Chair. And thanks for the presentation as well. This is a very, very important piece of legislation. However, indeed, it's before us at the very present time. As the committee, without raising any expectation that within the 2 weeks that is left, we will be able to have dealt with it. But we'll try the best that we can. Scientific invention, of course, is also brings some misery to humankind. If one looks to sectors such as agriculture and mining, word, we'll be talking of robotization. There is the fear of a lot of layoff of some jobs. I'm not putting it there, not necessarily in the context of the bill, but indicating that when there are changes, these changes also bring some other fears in human beings. And particularly in the mining industry, we know that when you use, you apply scientific inventions, there is indeed a fear that most of the laborers, the one that you may say that illiterate, or those that are unfortunate, will end up by having a fear of losing their job. Can you perhaps also allay that as we engage? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think there's something that I need to answer from the NCOP side, Honorable Julius. The bill is advertised in all national and regional newspapers, also on the radio. But we are waiting for public input and it's closing, and we didn't close only on Friday. But like I indicated to the Honorable Deputy Minister, there's nothing wrong to present the bill, but we cannot promise you that we will deal because time is not going to allow us to do justice to the bill. Yeah, but nevertheless, there's nothing wrong to it. Over to you, Honorable.
I left one question. Maybe if you can clarify us why the bill is focusing on the structure and not the actual training, so that we start to understand and appreciate why you decided to present a bill that is focusing mainly on the structure. That's basically the question that was elaborated by Honorable Julius.
Yeah, thank you, Honorable Deputy, and make it clear, because as we're going out, people are going to lobby, and it might be that the perception, if you're not clear, is going to be very negative going out. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to respond broadly on a number of things, and I think my colleagues will also come to the specifics. I think I agree with members of the NCOP. You know, it's the experience of being an ordinary member of parliament also teaches you. And I think one of the things, the observations we have made are very, very realistic. The important slides in this bill, it's slide 6, slide 8, and slide 9. Slide 9 is that one where it talks about provinces, and that's where we were supposed to unpack if we are saying how they creative new media industries. What is it that they'll be focusing on? What are the issues? How does it speak to 4IR and digital skills? If Limpopo is saying we're linking Limpopo with e-health, whether this, what do you call this e-health thing, where the doctor sits this side and the specialist somewhere that side. Especially addressing remote areas. So we are supposed to show all those things. Going to Mpumalanga and Free State, I mean Free State, all of us seated here, we know it's one strongest province with farming, but it had its mineral endowment is dying out and so on. So we were supposed to say, what is it that the Free State will be focusing on? Mpumalanga, while it is the hub of coal-fired power generation, but it also has other elements of farming and other things. So which technologies are we going to use to make sure that those things happen? So we are not saying anything about that. And I take that blame we are more focusing on the board and what the board will do in state of looking at the digital skills, the specialized skills, and why do we think Nkamva Institute must be there. And I would want to say to Honorable Julius, treat Nkamva like your Dinel Institute, your Transnet Institute, it's Transnet Telcom, Dinel, those that were specialized. So we want to, if you look at the 4IR, most of the people now are no longer going to consume content sitting on a television and watching. Most content come online, and there are this, the do's and don'ts of online, whether your iPad or laptop, iPhone or whatever. So we have to really look at those kind of specialized digital technology and then bring in proper training that will move along with that. So your way of listening to radio and other things, the conventional method of radio and how people can be able to consume all these other things will also change. So those are the kind of skills and training that we want, that our kids must start to develop apps that make them so that we also have our own young people developing their own Netflixes and then being able to make their own money. So coding, for instance, young people can do coding and develop an app at 9 years or at 8 years or whatever, and that person can start making money on her own. So those are the kind, and that's why we say digital skills do not only look at a matriculant, but you can do it before and after. So this is an institute that is going to focus more on giving people digital skills so that they can be able to become job creators themselves and be innovative. So I'm just saying, the institute still needs to exist because it is addressing particular skills. So we're moving not only from broadcasters and all these things, but we are integrating everything that has to do with digital and making sure that we are ready for the fourth industrial revolution. I was in Barcelona last week, and everybody's saying 5G speaks more about software development more than hardware. So innovation for young people is going to be more, and people will be able to do this and that and then be able to develop. So as South Africa, because we are rated number 4 in as far as providing universal access to internet services. Me and you seated here, we know we still lack broadband in the far-flung rural areas. But worldwide, compared to our counterparts in the continent, we are put number 4. So it means there's something good that we are doing, but we also need to enhance it. And once we roll out broadband, we are able to assist our kids in the schools to access Wi-Fi, internet, and all these things and become innovative. Not all kids want to be lawyers and what and all those things, but some may want to be these things. And you know how plumbers and other people in those years, through all these other institutes I talked to you about, whether Telkom, Eskom, and SLN Park and all these things, how they were able to develop people along those skills without them going to university. And these people are still doing good maintenance work, by the way. So we want to have an institute that deals with some of those things so that not only is it limiting unemployed youth who are unable to to deal with some of those things. So I went at length just for us to understand. And I think one of the things that is even coming up very, very in a more robust way from young people is that everything in South Africa is tested through the SABS. But because we're talking technology, we must also look at test labs that are relevant to technology so that we also do some of those things. So there's a lot of feedback that is coming. But I agree with you members to say the Act speaks more about the board. So we have to reformulate it. We have to unpack what we want to achieve in as far as 4IR, digital society and other things. So that's why I'm saying those three, 4 pages, we must unpack them and we must come here having elaborated on what is Mpumalanga going to do, what is the Free State going to do. So I agree with you and I think we are at one. So well, the term of office, I think one of the things that members should appreciate, having been exposed in that space of communications and other things, it's a very closed space, and the industry plays an important role in most cases. So whether your term of office is 3 years or whatever, they know the kind of skills that they want. So you must be a person who knows the space better so that you don't come and do catch up like Pink is doing, but you must hit the ground running. So that's one of the advantages. I think you have even seen on the SABC interviews the kind of people who go there. So they play around all these other things, whether it's for good or for bad, I don't know, but it's one of the areas where even if you say term of office is 3 years, people are able to hit the ground running, and it works well for us because you would want to see people being on their toes. I'm afraid, Chair, you remember I wrote to you an SMS just to say there's a presentation I must do, Cabinet Committee sitting, but I thought I must respond on this. But we have a broader framework. They will respond on specific issues around some of these things. But I'll give the minister feedback and all those things. Broadly, we agree on some of these things. We can't microwave. We have to do things right.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much for all the questions that we have received. Chair, maybe let me start off where I started when I made my presentation. I was already at pains trying to explain to the committee that I felt the presentation was already too long, you know. But it was out of a recognition that because we have not had sufficient interaction with this committee, one needed to do the best we could to present as much information as possible. As I say that, Chair, even this longish presentation is a gross summarization of the work that has been done to support the bill that is in front of the committee today. Like I said, we had to do a fully fledged business case, which teased out the concept for starters, dealt with the options, what was the best option to deliver the concept, and therefore the kind of law that needs to support this. So there's all that work. I do wish, I don't know how it could happen, you know, that we could take them even a longer time just to go through these issues. Even as I say that, Chair, the digital skills development is almost at the apex of a host of other things that we do to support access to ICTs, starting from policies dealing with access to infrastructure, which deal mostly with physical infrastructure and physical access, issues dealing with now really ability to utilize, whether it has to do with affordability, which prevents certain people from having access to these things, or also whether it has to do with then the lack of skills to utilize these services. So there is a package of interventions and to which this is but a culmination, Chairperson. So I do agree, but we had to just balance the length of the presentation. Maybe I'm starting from the end, because there were questions which perhaps we needed to deal with up front. Then there's a question about the bill detailing mostly on the board structures and those kind of things, and in a way that looks like it is a lopsided in the favor of the structure and not the essence of what is being proposed here. There is a reason for this. Members would have picked up, I think one member already mentioned, we're talking of dissolving NEMISA and deregistering in terms of the Companies Act. You know, the Companies Act and other corporate governance policies help to support, you know, the company in terms of ways of working. So if the company is not registered or incorporated in terms of the Companies Act, it means therefore that all the good practice or best practice provisions in those documents needed to be incorporated here. And I do understand we pretty much went to town then to make sure that all those things are incorporated in this bill, and hence spared the appearance that it's more on the structure as opposed to the content. But the content again is still not lost, at least in our view. We believe it is still there, and like I said, we will be happy to have another session to just talk the concept of what we are talking about here. Now, Chair, I must indicate I'm going to be assisted by the long list of my colleagues here to deal with some of the questions, including, I hope even the legal advisor to Parliament as the person we have been closely working with, as well as the chairperson of the NEMISA board. Yes, Chairperson, this initiative or this bill is located entirely into the provisions of the ICT policy. The ICT policy recognizes that even if we were to roll out the physical infrastructure, unless people are able to have effective access, which now talks to the ability to utilize these services that we roll out, we would not have done enough. It also recognizes that technology is becoming an almost essential part of life. It covers now all dimensions, not only work, even at a social level. Technology is so important, even at an entertainment level. So the policy recognized that, and hence our effort to make sure that this is indeed available. Now, there was a question, I think there has been actually several questions which talked about, I think there was one which talked about our bullets on page or slide 7, the first and the third, which talked about, amongst other things, localization. What we envisage here is with the availability of technology and access to technology, then the necessary skills to utilize this will then spur or encourage the development of products which will be manufactured in South Africa. Essentially, localization here, we mean the ability to use our understanding and knowledge of technology to start to create products and applications that seek to solve our problems. Long before we talk even about exportation and so on of those products, but developing our own products to deal with our own problems. And that is the kind of localization that we are talking about today. That is the kind also of local content development. If you have access to these gadgets, to you have the skills, then the chances of developing the content of our own rather than importing this content is enhanced a great deal. So that is what we are trying to say there, Chair. I'm going to request the Chairperson of NEMISA to talk about the thematic areas of the collabs across the country, but also perhaps update the committee on the work that is being done on Free State and Mpumalanga to make sure that they also have their own collabs. Chair, I think the other question, particularly the one which talks about this may appear as a job creation for existing board members and so on. What we were trying to deal with there really was that in order to prevent a situation where you will have a void or a gap when this law comes into being, let's develop transitional measures. You know, that is why we are providing that the board of NEMISA continues to operate until their end, therefore allowing the minister to then appoint the new board. As things stand, over a period of time, as I indicated, this process comes from a little way back. As we have been refreshing the board of NEMISA, we have been seeking to ensure that they are no longer exclusively focused on broadcasting, which was the original mandate of NEMISA, but start to expand the skill set in the board to cover all the other areas of digital skills. So, Chair, it has, or at least there was no intention there to just preserve jobs for the existing members of the board. I think, Chair, the other fundamental question really relates to whether this institute is actually the mandate of our department. You know, the members are saying, why don't you give this over to education. When the minister or the deputy minister talks about the fourth industrial revolution, in essence that is recognizing that technology is permeating all the sector, and it is us who are at the forefront of technology and innovation that we need to support the other sectors of the economy. Whether you talk agriculture, whether you talk mining, whether you talk education or health, we are supposed to be championing, you know, the utilization of technology to deal with the problems encountered in those sectors. So I think as we unpack, you know, the fourth industrial revolution, we are going to be demonstrating how our department can be of assistance to other sectors of economy in terms of technology adoption, but also harnessing it to deal with our problems. So, Chair, I have also mentioned that in the business case we developed, we teased up all the possible options, and we came to the conclusion that that was indeed the best option. I think I need to emphasize the institute itself, at least as it is provided for right now, itself does not do any training, you know, but it serves as a catalyst. It is just prompting the relevant sectors and institutions to adopt the right technologies, but also to start, you know, improving their curriculum, you know, such that technology becomes an integral part of it. You know. So that is a very tight line we had to manage. Higher education was very clear in telling us, you are not into training, and we acknowledged that. But we are also saying there has been a huge lament that universities are not particularly immediately responsive, you know, to the needs of either the society, the industry, and so on. So to the extent that we could assist through this institute, you know, we are hoping to bring them along, catalyzing the development of new curriculum, which focuses at least on the area of our interest, which is technology. There was a question, I think it dealt with a slide number 16, on where we talk about utilization or reliance on existing infrastructure and resources, and the response is exactly that. We are saying this institute does not need to go out and reinvent the wheel in terms of establishing its offices, its training, infrastructure, and everything across the country. I do not think as a country we have the funds and resources available to do that. We are building onto existing infrastructure and are utilizing existing resources. Hence, we are codifying in the bill the need to partner with existing higher education and training institutions. Then that brings me to the point about why is there almost like a bias towards higher education and training? In the bill, we are providing for the need of our minister to engage both the ministers of higher education and training as well as basic education, so that some of the lessons and technologies that are emerging are also adopted in improving the syllabus at a basic education level. Again, this institute will not do that itself, but it will make sure that the relevant institutions do adopt the correct technology, the technologies, and also develop the correct skills. There was a question, Chair, about the white paper talking about rationalization. We acknowledge that indeed is the case, and this is but one of the rationalizations. Perhaps you can even call it the easier one, you know, because we are matching almost like for like. There are other rationalization initiatives that are currently underway. One of them is what we call the repurposing of the State Information and Technology Agency, CETA. There we are looking at truly refreshing the mandate of CETA so that it becomes a true IT company, not an IT procurement company. So there's a lot of rationalization work that is happening, Chair. There, we will be also be happy to come to this committee to just take the committee through that work. Also, we are saying with the development of technology and the convergence of technologies, we have also been given a go-ahead to merge the broadband infraco with Centec, the signal distribution SOE. Again, there are so much efficiency gains, not only in terms of headcount, but mostly in terms of business synergy and technology, which you require to deliver those services. Again, we will be happy there to come to the committee for details. Then there was a question about where I mentioned we have already secured funding from the fiscus. Chair, the fiscal allocations are only arrived at us through Parliament. We are referring here to appropriations from Parliament. NEMISA in the past used to have a budget of about just over 50 million because it was focused on broadcasting training. As we were evolving this business case, we made a case to Treasury which they supported and therefore almost doubled the budget. It now currently sits on average around 100 million per annum, recognizing the need to start developing the rest of the spectrum of digital skills. So, Chair, we did not bypass Parliament. That funding was through Parliament. But even as we have done so, there is still a recognition, it's again captured in our business case, that digital skilling requires by far more than the 100 million that is at the disposal of NEMISA. So we said that this is where we're starting, and we're hopefully looking forward to even more resources being availed to this critical function. But we are also saying there is even scope to leverage other already existing funding sources across government and industry to add or to complement the funding provided to the department. So we are also therefore providing for these kind of partnerships. We're saying at higher education and training, we are looking at their National Skills Fund to assist, because this is essentially about skills development, you know, but mostly focusing on technology. There was, Chair, a question on the public comments. My colleagues will help me, but the rule of thumb is we advertise or gazette pieces of legislation for 30 days, and immediately the 30-day period closes, we start the analysis and incorporation of such public comments, and that's exactly what happened here. I think we advertised early November, which meant we closed almost early December, and we worked almost into the holiday season to make sure that we dealt with all those comments in December still. So, Chair, then there was a question which I think the committee itself will deal with, really, the one talking about the amount of time available at the disposal of the committee. Yeah, Chair. The issue of MOUs, particularly in Mpumalanga and Free State, which are remaining a different color, I would request the professor to talk to those. Let me then talk to the Independent Nominations Committee. This is almost now becoming a new trend in the pieces of legislation. It essentially says, as opposed to just departmental officials picking and selecting individuals and recommending them to the minister, we do a public advertisement or notice process requesting these nominations. And these nominations are then considered by a committee independent of the department. We will then serve just as the secretariat supporting the committee. But these are the people we will pick up from the society at large, different components of the society who we will consider to have sufficient skills to recommend to the minister the relevant people to serve as members of this board. The number of years in the board, this one has been debated, you know, in many forums. What we have acknowledged is that on average, you know, a typical board member will serve about 5 to 6 years in an organization, which is why we have allowed for terms of 3 years, but a possibility of a reappointment, which will give you your typical 5 to 6 years, taking into account resignations and so on. So that then is the reason for the number of years we have provided for here. The alternative, because there were indeed views which were saying maybe 5 years then is the right number, you know, for each term. But that would have meant that then for two terms the person would have served 10 years in that organization. And the emerging wisdom from corporate governance is that after that long period of time, you know, people cease to be independent. They start to sound almost like the executives of that company. There was a question on political office bearers of a political party. I will leave that to my colleagues to deal with. Then perhaps the chairperson of the board will talk to the issues of implementation, what exactly it will take to then implement or translate the provisions of this bill into implementable programs. We do acknowledge that automation in any industry poses a serious risk to job layoffs, and which is why I think as we finalize our work on the 4IR, you know, we will essentially be saying we cannot ignore that technology or that revolution is upon us. We need, though, to harness it to the best of our ability, that we utilize it to our benefit. So it requires we acknowledge reskilling, retraining, upskilling, and all those good things, which then ensures that the technology, you know, does not render most of us irrelevant in the working world. Chairperson, I think I've covered the bulk of the questions, but I'll request my colleagues to add. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Shall I proceed?
Yes. Honourable Chairperson, honourable members, thank you very much for the opportunity to respond to some of the issues that were raised. May I just start at a general level by saying all countries that are successful in managing the digital skills advance that is coming and taking advantage of that for the benefit of the country have got some kind of an agency that takes responsibility. The core approach, and that is without exception worldwide, is that the key words in a successful digital strategy is multi-stakeholder collaboration. You got to get all the stakeholders involved instead of allocating to one stakeholder and saying, we hope you can do it, and perhaps you may not. The whole idea is to get all stakeholders involved, to organize from academia, education, business, organized labor. The whole idea is to get everybody involved. Therefore, you need an agency to take that responsibility. It is unbelievable how low the level of digital expertise sometimes is. The Deputy Minister mentioned our internet readiness. That's interesting. But take, for example, something such as data literacy. We always say our young people, they know everything. Just leave it to them, they can do it. Well, the latest, and it's very fresh, data analysis survey, which is a worldwide survey, indicates that for the young people, only 21% of them are really, one can really say that they are data literate. They might be able to use their devices for everything, but data literate means, amongst others, knowing what data you give away and what you don't give away, and that relates again to cybersecurity. So there is a role for an agency in a country to play this role, and this role was allocated in 2014, end of 2014. This role was allocated to NAMESA after it was incubated over a period in building on best examples. And the wonderful thing that developed in this country is the fact that it was not centralized, but it was decentralized to entities that are enthusiastic, that engage within the university structures and the university networks, and those are the ones we call collabs. And let me immediately come to what seems to be a vacancy, an opening, an unclarity on two collabs. The agreements with those two collabs, the Mpumalanga one and the Free State one, those agreements were formally signed in October, I think it was, end of October. There were delays initially, yes, due to a number of factors at NAMESA, but eventually those were signed. I've got in front of me a most interesting document coming from the team which was designated at the University of Mpumalanga about their approach. They call it the concept document for the establishment of a collab in the province. We had a debate on this with them middle of December. They are finalizing it now, coming to the board, and at our next board meeting the theme will be finalized. The concept coming from them is actually very, keep in mind we don't enforce themes onto a province or an institution with whom we start to talk. We engage with them. And then once that engagement shows that they are willing to do that, we give 1 year for them to do an environmental scan of the crucial issues and role part players in that province and to come forward with that. I've got here a statement saying, the emerging of the fourth, and this is from Mpumalanga, of the 4IR technologies requires a shift towards digital integration for effective operations of our daily activities. And then it says Mpumalanga province has a wealth in agriculture, mining sector, health and education that can benefit from, and then they propose a theme, digital integration and cybersecurity. Meaning with digital integration, the word that is often used also for that is digital uptake. How do you ensure uptake in communities where it is not evident that you will get the uptake? Unemployed youth, they might be able to use their devices for messaging, but can they do it for building businesses? Small businesses. We're not thinking of huge businesses necessarily. Small businesses can, within a few years, lead to big business and to being able to employ others, not only to employ yourself. We've seen that, if I may use an example, we've seen that happening, and I've been attending some of those training sessions in Kailicha, for example, where it is amazing to see how people who at start of the meeting say, what is Wi-Fi? At the end of a two-day session, they can use their smartphone to manage their one-person SME, survivalist we call it, SMEs. They can manage that in a much better and much more efficient way. That is the kind of training. It cannot be allocated to a university. They're not functioning in those spaces. The important thing is to bring all the role players together. In fact, if you would allocate it to basic education, of course they've got a role to train the learners at the schools, but as we've heard, even the teachers have to be trained first to get to that position. So in the case of the Free State University, due to existing focuses at the foci at the university in terms of their speciality, the focus will be strongly in the area of robotics. And we don't speak of humanoid, human-shaped robots. Of course, we speak about robotic processes and things related to that. There is a strong focus at the university. We've got all believe that something interesting will come out of it. We expect a document again this month to serve at next month's board meeting coming from them. May I just say, with the thematic areas of the provinces, the whole idea is not that that is all they do. That is one of the things they do. 60% of the activities go into a broad range of training in ordinary people, in ordinary digital skills, in office training for people who live out in communities that are somewhat isolated, etc. And then they specialize in a certain area to make that specialized knowledge shareable for the whole of the organization. I think this is a model that functions. The question was also asked about how do we go about putting all of this into programs. Programs cannot be pushed onto a community. It must develop from the needs of a community. If I can take one quick example, in the Eastern Cape, the role of the CoLab in that province in bringing together all the role players in economic development, in government, in education, and especially in business, and that's a province which is highly dependent on on technically skilled people in the automotive industry, as you know. That would not have been possible without the existence of a CoLab there. I've been involved in some of those sessions. That would not have been possible without that kind of involvement and without the leadership coming from a central side of NAMESA onto the individual CoLab. So the individual programs are worked out in conjunction with people. In the Western Cape CoLab, I've just heard about it, that on Friday, last Friday, there was an engagement with the leaders of a number of agricultural organizations with a CoLab to say, we want to roll out to have you roll out a number of your programs into the agricultural community in the Western Cape. So this is the type of activity that happens. The CoLab directors are linking people. They are people bringing parties together, identifying needs, supporting people to come up with ideas, and then to say, let's do this, and let's develop a program for this, or let's use this and that program. Jefferson, I hope this gives an answer to some of the issues that were raised.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable members, are you satisfied? Or is there any question for clarity or a follow-up? If not, there's none. Okay, sure.
Let me not leave this meeting without raising this. We are not confused as members of Parliament or of this committee. You know, my major concern, to be explicit and lucid about it, we are collapsing two organizations, if not three, into one. We are not reinventing the wheel. Understand? Now, my major concern is what is presented in this presentation, this document. Yes, it forms part of the piece of legislation, the bill. But then I can tell you, this presentation, not the bill part of it, or the legislative part of it, but the content that deals with projects has not changed. That's my major concern. I don't need any response to that, but I'm saying the content of the projects that we are talking about here, there's no progress, in my view, and according to the substance of this document that you have presented to us. That's my major concern. Hence, my first question was to say, can you unpack the localization and the progress thereof in terms of job creation, the impact, significant impact on the lives of our people? We have been engaged in this. The term is ending now in March. This has not changed. I don't need an answer. I was just driving that point. Thanks. Because, Chair, each financial year, we adopt and pass budget. And all the entities, state entities, they get allocations. And if somebody can say, some of the entities, they just need to be collapsed because they are useless. They are just smoothing out resources without any significant impact to meet the social needs of our people. That's the fundamental point that I'm driving. Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Julius.
Chairperson, in line of that also and the responses, I think it will be good to now set the way forward for this bill. Based on what the Deputy Minister also said, that they must come back with other information, you know, to give clarity on certain things they omitted, like the provinces and not like
Sorry, Chair. I think it's a little bit unfair. I thought maybe we'll allow them to finish the responses, then we'll get to the part that is raising, because it's very important. They were not done. We're still left with the one or two. So let's allow the process to finish.
Can you proceed with
that? Thank you, Honourable Chair and members. Perhaps not on the last question. I'm sure my DRG will come in, but except to note that really the Ikamba Digital Skills Institute is an entity in the making. But going to the matter of the, there was a question about the board, and it sort of had different elements to the question, but one part of it was that is the board not just a job creation, or at the same time it has a new mandate, but it's the same people, could it then perform this function? Let's just recognize that, Honourable Chair, it's a transitional provision that we need here. At least we don't have three boards that we have to now merge and really let two boards go. At least there's only one board in the equation. But at the same time, we need to make provision for the continuation of this board to ensure a smooth transition and incorporation really into the newly established entity. I mean, there can't be alternatives that we can see, Chair. There's no grounds for dismissal of sorts of the current board, and we have to also follow the relevant legal prescripts here and certainly avoid any adverse financial implications by letting a current board go and just appointing new people that have no idea of this new entity and its mandate and the continuation of existing functions. So we believe, Chair, as the whole e-skills and digital skills journey has been in the making for a while, that the current board is well equipped to commence this work at this point in time, at least in this transitional phase. There was also a matter, Chair, of the of why can't education simply do this and you can just tell education what should be done. We respectfully, Chair, must firstly say, as presented, that we have the support of DHET and their concurrence in the role that the supporting role and the functions of the new institute as anticipated in this draft legislation. Chair, the purpose of our institute is exactly this, to inform education of the ICT, e-skill, digital skills needs of the country and society. It's a specialized area, Chair. We've recently heard that science would become a compulsory subject in schools, but we haven't heard ICT or digital skills would be a compulsory subject. So why is that missing? All policy documents recognize the urgent and critical need for the advancement of digital skills. So we believe the Institute brings this by specializing and focusing on the promotion and support of digital skills. And we believe that without this intervention, the status quo will simply continue, Chair. Here there's the risk. If one looks at our children, some schools would have computer labs, others won't, but the curricula is not there. Certainly my own kids, there's no digital skills development for them at school, and therefore we certainly believe there's a role for this entity going forward. In terms of mandate, Chair, we certainly have a mandate from government, and we here talk about at least South Africa Connect, the broadband policy, we can talk about the National Integrated ICT Policy White Paper, and even various existing legislation that give our department a mandate to promote digital skills. It might be called ICT skills or skills, different terminology used, but effectively digital skills, and certainly to ensure the development and demand stimulation in this area, which we say skills development is the answer to that, Chairman. The matter of collaborating, or at least the why only post-education schooling. So from on the face of it, it may appear that the bill and the institute and the collabs would only have a post-education focus, Chair. But I must say over time this mandate has broadened, and the bill now clearly includes education at different levels. For example, in Clause 4.2b, it talks about collaboration with the Department of Basic Education. Now, certainly that means it's not just post-school. It talks about the collabs, for example, that must be open to all stakeholders, and it talks about the promotion of digital skills. And therefore, Chair, we submit that it's really digital skills for the whole society. It doesn't just take the form of a certain category of society that would be skilled and have an opportunity to be skilled through this process. And just last one, though, it has been answered, at least from the DDG, from the perspective of saying that, let me focus on the question first, was about this bill. It's really a lot about structure of an organization as opposed to actual wording or provisions on training. Chair, and the DDG responded that governance provisions are necessary because you don't have a fallback like the Companies Act that could provide all the governance. So we must emphasize this is, in the first instance, a governance law that deals with the establishment of an entity and all the required governance provisions to make sure it is equipped to do its work. We would say that it's very important to have governance provisions in a bill or in a law to ensure that you have a strong entity with strong governance, to ensure ultimately that it's working and effective and functioning. If you don't deal with governance properly, often matters of appointments and removal and committees and decisions are left to interpretation during the course of its operations, and that leads to conflict and uncertainty and a lot of legal problems that one often sees in state-owned entities and other organizations. So ordinarily these governance laws then would have a part of it to clearly describe what is the mandate and the functions and responsibilities of this particular organization, as this bill do, and we would say, Chair, that it's similar to many other governance laws, even in our own stable, whether it's the CENTEC Act or the SOPO Act or the Post Bank Act, to name just a few of them. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Is there any other one?
Chair, I just wanted to respond to the question on the exclusion of political office bearers. That was a point that was discussed at length in the portfolio committee, and what we've done there, Chair, is to exclude any person who is an office bearer with a registered party, and we've said that must be a registered party in terms of the Electoral Commission Act. And we did have a discussion about possibly broadening it, but that would have created difficulties. So whilst you have movements that may be political in nature, so for example your trade unions, certain NPOs, even churches can be political. You've got the BLF, you've got AfriForum that are not actually political parties, but they may have political agendas and are political in some sense. Or the other, the difficulty with making it too broad is that you don't know where to draw the line, because you may have somebody that wants to be that you'd want to appoint to the board, but he belongs to a golf club, and somebody then says, but that golf club has a particular agenda. It would become very difficult to manage, which is why we then tied it down saying only political parties that are properly registered. That was the first thing. Chair, on the issue of the passage of time that it took in the portfolio committee, indeed it was about 8 months. What the members may not know is that we changed the bill considerably. So this B version looks very, very different to the version that was introduced for a number of reasons. One of them, Chair, is that we firstly acknowledge the fact that this area that we're dealing with is fast moving, it's always going to be evolving. So we didn't want to put too much detail here, because what we see in the digital skills framework for today, Prof will explain, in 5 years' time might look very, very different. So we deliberately kept it quite broad. The co-labs, which I see there's been a lot of focus on the co-labs in today's meeting, is but one aspect of what this institute is going to do. We did in the portfolio committee try to tie down exactly what these co-labs are going to do, and you'll see that the section dealing with co-labs particularly talks about agreements that must be signed. It talks about the funding, who does what, how they do it, how resources will be allocated. So we tried our best to put in mechanisms to ensure that all these who, why, what, and how is going to be captured. Otherwise, they can't function without that. Then, as Alf has pointed out, there is a lot of emphasis on the governance provisions. That was something that we also added in the portfolio committee. That was a lesson we've taken out of the first Parliament, Chair, with the difficulties we've had with SABC and ESCOM and all of these boards, that it's better to have it in the law where it's clear how we appoint, how we remove, who's eligible, who isn't eligible, And then we also put quite a bit of the ethical standards in there, as well as the conflict of interest and so on, to make sure that the board functions properly. If the institute isn't functioning properly, it's never going to be able to achieve the outcome, because then the focus becomes very internal on who's doing what in the board, rather than looking broadly at what this institute is doing. So the committee was very much cognizant of that, and that is why you'll see that there are that many provisions dealing with it. So Chair, it wasn't 8 months of wasting time. The two versions are significantly different, and that version, the original version, can of course be shared with the committee if they wish to see the differences that were made. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. That was a legal person. Honourable Julius, over to you.
Chairperson, before we get to the procedure, can I just, for clarity's sake, ask a question about the finances from fiscus? Let me just be more specific. I think I wasn't that clear in asking the question. More specifically, are you will this be an entity that will make a profit, or will you rely on fiscus to give you money every year? Because we don't have.
Thank you very much, Chair. I also do personally wish this could make money, but unfortunately this is essentially what is called a public good or service that we are delivering here. It's almost pretty much saying the school must make a profit. The idea here is, if you were to lean towards making a profit, you are definitely then going to provide skills on the basis of affordability, and therefore leave out quite a significant segment of the population. This is why then we see this as a public good which needs to be supported through public funding on an ongoing basis. Thank you.
Public school.
Thank you. I just want to know, during the Parliament of the People, some of our committees visited, I'm not saying maybe some of the, that's why I want to ask you, their relationship, especially in Gauteng, the hubs, they're doing the same skills. Young people is coming in, they train them to develop their own apps, to assist government in the drought thing, or the, you know, the water scare, irrigation, and etc. Is it the same thing that you want to do? Or can you just explain to me? Let's say co-lab, the difference between co-lab and hub. I want to understand, because we visited university, and we also visit a private where they train young people who come in the city system. Also, the focus is also on the food industry.
Thank you, Chair. My brief response perhaps to this one is, this institute does not seek or to replace or duplicate the work of such hubs, but this is the institute that is supposed to, over time, harness, you know, the direction of these hubs, pull them together, and to some degree even now advocate for the major thrust, you know, of the skills that we need to be focusing on. We talk of the skills of the future, scarce and critical skills, those kind of things. That function in terms of this bill is located to this institute. But like I said, this institute will not do training itself, you know. It will be strengthening the existing initiatives taking place across the board.
Thank you very much. I think we are done with our business today. Thank you for the presentation. thank you for answering our questions. That was the presentation on the bill, and I think the House of the Committee is adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank
you.
Oh, the way forward is we're waiting for, I was explaining to you, we are waiting for the posting date of the advert is Friday for submissions, and then if we received, we are going to invite, if there is time, I don't know about the time frame. This is what we are going to do. If we are going to
arrange,
there is no time, that's why we receive time, we are listening. But if we receive something, because we didn't receive anything, we are not going to put it.
Sir Chair, I don't think we should rush into anything. There is no time, and that's it.
Yeah, I'm saying
we didn't rush into anything.
We discussed it this morning at our management committee that we didn't receive anything. But if we received, we will deal if we come there, how we. But there is no time. Like we explained, there is no time. Honorable House Chair.
I'm assisting you, Chair. What was discussed today in the last plan of NCOP, there is a plan for this bill, but with a proviso that as long as we're going to be in line with all the regulations and the rules of NCOP, but it's part of the plan. Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the clarity, because that was my understanding, that we must proceed. If we will get any information, then we will.
Chairperson, just one thing. Did we ask for public comments? Because I sense that from when did we ask it until when? Because that was one of my...
Yeah, I'm going to repeat myself. You asked the question, I explained, but you was asked.
Which Friday? This coming Friday is the end of the it was what time? Over 3 weeks. I advertised all the papers, all on the radio.
Or else in Northern Cape, it went past. Some of us are from very bad provinces.
You can send it to Sunday papers and die. On your left.
Come on, brother.